Technorama episode 668, Hairband Extravaganza. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening or watching us, thank you very much for joining us. If you are returning, well, you know the drill. We're the Lenny and Squiggy of podcasting. You know, we've got the clothes, we got the attitude. It's just we're not being taken seriously on this show for some reason. We're not that cool.
You know, after 17 years, we're still not taken seriously.
They were like the losers of the greasers. We're in there for podcasting.
Right.
You know, we walk in the room and go, hello.
Hello. That's right.
Usually right after somebody says something like slime or dirt or whatever. You got to have a cue to walk in on. I'm Chuck Tabassi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. I'll be Squiggy. No, I'll be Lenny. He was taller. And Craig, you can be Squiggy. How are you, Craig?
I think I'm okay.
My goal is to make you laugh so hard you cough again.
Oh, don't do that. Actually, yeah, heads up. I've mentioned this on the pre-show, but I thought we were going to have a pre-show a little longer than we did. But if you're listening to the show, I'm going to try and mute myself. I had a cold for the last few days. So I'm at the tail end of it, but I get that little cough and sniffle phase. I'm almost done.
Okay.
Yeah. So just letting you know ahead of time.
All right. Let's jump right into our question of the week. I like this one. Our question of the week this time was, what character, book, or movie name would be a great band name? Okay, so Craig, would you like to start going through the Technorama ones, and we'll alternate around until we run out?
Sure. So,
what do you got?
Weber Baker says, from Lord of the Rings, Nine Walkers. That's a good one. Or Nine Dark Riders.
Wasn't it the Night Walker?
Nine Walkers?
Okay. Or Walker, Texas Ranger. Gary Lindro says, right. The Untouchables. Like, that's a good band name. I could see that. Mm.
Mike Robeson says, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Okay, Gary's got another one. He says, Zardox. What kind of band name is Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance?
I don't know. I kind of like it, though.
Okay. Zardox.
Wait a minute.
That's a band name from, 60s or 70s, I think.
Right. So he wasn't done. Okay. He had Thumper, Fiverr.
Yeah.
He stumbled across these, looking up half-forgotten books. Everyday Everybody Poops.
That's a good band name right there. That's a book, actually.
Everybody Poops. The Joy of Chickens. The Do-It-Yourself Lobotomy. Cooking with Poo.
Cooking with Poo. That's a band name. Cooking with Poo.
I was thinking like the bear poo, but
that would have an H on the end of it.
I know, you're right. The book title I was looking for turned out to be longer than I remembered. The Jewish Japanese Sex and Cookbook, How to Raise the Wolves.
All right, Myron Dupler's gone into the Scott Sigler Library. He says these would be good band names. Nocturnal, I like that. It's a good band name. Or Earthcore. Another one.
Yeah.
Good.
Clinton Alvord, our buddy over the topic is trek.com.
I'll give him a bell for that one.
There you go. He said Firestarter. Mm. That could be good. Mm. The Outer Limits. Mm. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and Zaphod People Brox.
Well, there was a comment on that one, wasn't there? Like, what do you have, two lead guitars or something?
He said, wondering if Zaphod Beeblebrox has two lead singers. Yeah, why not?
They could sing a duet.
Actually, I imagine he would, if he was playing guitar, I imagine he'd be one of those people that had like the two guitars, you know, like two necks on the guitar.
Oh, sure. And he'd be singing a song like My Endless Love because he loves himself. Okay.
That's right.
I'm gonna steal one off of your list, Mike. Not Mike Robeson. Where's my Craig Step one? Oh, Mike Robeson shared also, but he didn't get any comments.
Got three shares.
Darn it. Where's Craig's? Craig Share says The Hunt for Red October from Gary Lindros. It's a good band name.
Right.
All right. Are we out of answers there? Yeah.
No.
No.
Not
keep
at all.
Keep going.
All right. So Mike Robeson continued with Damnation Alley.
Good. I like it.
Soylent Green.
Yeah, that's a good band name. Are you sure that's not already taken?
Mm.
I'm going to have to check the karaoke library on that one.
Eh, it's the people. And To Serve Man.
Is it questionable? Good band name.
And our buddy Steve London said The Hobbits with a Z. Slow rock.
Dance band.
Dance band.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, we had in the 70s and 80s, hundreds of small bands touring the country. They all played the same music, 4x4 beats or bit rocky and funny costumes due to some sort of taxation rules regarding stage clothes.
So they went to the thrift store.
He said, and many of them had names that were added with the letter Z or X. Or other fantastic names.
Oh, so, gay.
That's pretty interesting. Oh,
like
Neelix. Share a link.
Neelix.
Share a link to Pinterest. Pinterest, you can go see some of the bands. Yeah.
Oh, that would be a good question of the day on the next Star Trek cruise. What Star Trek character, race, or would be a good band name? Neelix.
Andorians.
Tuvok.
Oh, and John Mullen Jr. said, call the band the Mega Man Experience.
Okay.
Mega Man.
All right, I got a quiz for you.
Okay.
I'm calling this movie, book, or band name. Yep, you have to tell me, is this the name of a movie, name of a book, or movie, a name of a band name?
I did
a real quick test on this with Scott Tyler yesterday, and he got like the first 3 out of 3, but then we ran out of time. So,
all right.
Yesterday Girl. Movie, book, or band name?
Book.
Oh, so sorry.
Yes.
That is the name of a movie.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Living with Crazy Buttocks.
What? Book.
Yes, there you go. You get a Mario coin for that one. Porno for Pyros.
Oh, that's an album.
That wasn't a choice. It's movie, book, or band name.
Band name. Not album. It was a band name.
Pyromania was an album by Def Leppard.
There you go.
You're two for one. Okay.
Yeah.
Outskirts.
Band name.
No, that would be a movie.
Actually, that one wouldn't be that bad for band name.
Panic at the Disco.
Another band name.
Yes, there you go. I think Julie or Will was singing that when they were here. The Ape Woman.
Movie.
Yes. There you go. They're going to get a little harder as we go. Themrock. Themroc.
Band name.
No, that's a movie.
That's a movie?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Royal Knits. KNITS. Royal Knits.
That sounds like a band name.
That is a book.
What's it about?
I have no idea. I didn't read these. I just. Man on a Swing.
Book.
Movie.
Because I was gonna say that's the boringest movie. Okay. You know, just for an hour, 2 hours.
Watching a man on Swing. Almost as much fun as Man on a Rocking Chair. Maximo Park.
Band name.
Yes. I wonder if it's anywhere near Lincoln Park. I'm not sure. Okay, let's keep going. This is way too much fun.
All right.
Half Asleep in Frog Pajamas.
I want to say band, but I'm going to say book.
It is a book. Yay. Okay. Gets it. Okay. The Mr. T Experience. Joe would know this one.
Band.
That is a band. You are absolutely correct. Okay. I can't say this one with a straight face. God's Doodle.
Movie?
Book?
What in the hell is that book about?
I don't want to know. Hopefully there's no illustrations.
Nah.
All right. Deadlock.
Deadlock. Book.
Movie.
Oh.
I'm not guaranteeing that some of these movies weren't books first, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't.
Right. Okay.
Light Lark. All one word.
Light Lark.
L-I-G-H-T. L-A-R-K. Light Lark.
Band.
No, that would be a book.
Oh.
Okay, you better get this one. I heard about it in college. The Dead All Milkmen.
Right. Oh, that's a band.
Yay! Okay.
I'll how listen
about,
to them.
How about Mount Joy?
I'm more of an Almond Joy kind of guy, but...
Not candy bars.
Oh, okay. Not candy bar. Mount Joy... Book.
Band.
Really?
Now, I will say that I'm pretty sure none of these are pornographic, so you can take Mount Joy as a movie any way you want.
Wait, did you say movie?
Mount Joy is a band.
Okay.
Fashion Cats.
Fashion Cats. Movie?
Book.
That's a book.
I thought that'd be a good band name, too.
Is it self-published books? You know, because...
The Laziest Men on Mars.
Now, I could get behind that as a band name. I'm going to go band
you
name.
You would be absolutely correct on that one, sir.
There you go.
There you go. Theory of a Dead Man.
Book.
Band.
Really?
Okay, I got a couple more for you.
All right.
Bodybuilders in Tutus.
Book.
That is a book, yes.
I can imagine a bunch of pictures. Yeah.
I just want to see the band.
It's a picture book. Yeah, right.
If you thought Devo was crazy. Okay. The White Reindeer.
Book.
Movie.
What?
Movie.
I don't remember seeing that one or hearing about it.
I don't remember hearing about any of these, Craig. The King's Stilts. You're going to kick yourself on this one.
Band.
Book by Dr. Seuss.
It's Dr. Seuss?
Yes. I thought I'd throw
it
that
said
one in
the
there.
The King's Stilts?
The King's Stilts, yes. Okay, one more.
Okay.
Pat... Symmetry, not Pet Cemetery. Pat Symmetry.
Pat Symmetry. Book.
Band. I wasn't keeping score, but I think you did pretty well. Considering these are really obscure things.
I don't think it did too bad, but I want to go find some of these bands now.
The points are meaningless and nobody's keeping score anyway. So
that's right.
Good job, Craig.
Oh, there you go. There's the King Stilts right there. It's
Yep.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss, you're
right. Yep. All right, that takes care of our feedback and our fun game.
Another letter from our listeners.
We may bring that again. Bring that back again from time to
that
time.
That was kind of fun. I'll be honest with you. There was I mentioned it. There was a lot of them in there. I would go, that could be a cool band name.
It could be a cool band name. That's what I said. I wanted to see the Bodybuilders in Tutus.
Right.
All right, let's do the history. On this day in history for March 23rd, 2022, it is the 82nd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 283 days remaining in 2022. It was on this date in 1806, after traveling through the Louisiana Purchase. Did they have a receipt for that? Yes. Reaching the Pacific Ocean, explorers Lewis and Clark and their, quote, core of discovery. Began their arduous journey home. They just got to the Pacific Ocean, went, oh, turn around. Oh, Was somebody supposed to be making a map? We got to find our way home.
Oops.
Call Uber.
So Alicia Otis's first elevator was installed in 1488 Broadway, New York City, on this date in 1857, which is funny because I've noticed the word Otis and a bunch of elevators in Charlotte.
That's where the name comes from. You'll find that most elevators are Northwestern, Schindler, Otis, or... Oh, what's the one I'm missing? Oh, I had it. It was Schmeckle. I should have said it first. No, I'll figure it anyway. It's one of those weird things I pay attention to.
King Stilts.
The King Stilts, right. Actually, it was, you know, Otis's elevator gave, no pun intended, gave, actually, I do intend a pun here, gave rise to the advent of the American big city skyline, the high rises. Skyscrapers would not be possible without elevators.
That's right.
That same date in 1965, NASA launched Gemini 3, or as they used to call it, Gemini 3, the United States' first two-man spaceflight with crew Gus Grissom and John Young.
And also on that, on March 23rd, 1983, President Ronald Reagan made his initial proposal to develop technology to intercept enemy missiles known as Strategic Defense Initiative, or Star Wars.
Montgomery elevators. That's the one I was trying to remember.
Oh, Montgomery.
I knew it. It came to me halfway through your sentence. Like,
I've
I don't know why.
Otis everywhere. Yeah. I haven't noticed any other ones but Otis.
Northwestern and Schindler is a popular one. It was on this date in 2001 that the Russian Mir space station was disposed of, breaking up in the atmosphere before falling into the Southern Pacific Ocean near Fiji. Happy birthday goes on this date to American botanist and explorer John Bartram. Born on this date in 1699.
And Pierre-Simon Laplace. My place.
Your place or mine?
Yeah. French mathematician and astronomer was born on that same day in 1749.
Also born March 23rd, 1754. Slovene mathematician, physicist, and artillery officer Yuri Vega.
Yuri Vega. An English geologist and cartographer. William Smith was born 253 years ago today.
Good job with that name.
It's kind of old.
William Smith.
Thank you.
Susan Jane Cunningham. No relation to Richie Cunningham. The American mathematician was born on that same date in 1842.
And born March 23rd, 1882, Jewish German-American mathematician, physicist, and academic, Emmy Noether.
German-American physicist and engineer Wernher von Braun, the rocket guy. Yeah, you know him. He was born 110 years ago today.
And Ludwig Ladovev, the Russian mathematician and physicist, was born 88 years ago today.
American singer, songwriter, guitarist, and producer from the Cars, Rick Ocasek, or Ocasek, as they say in the old country, was born 78 years ago today.
Oh my gosh, he's 78?
Yep.
No kidding.
Uh-oh, wow, it's magic.
I'm having a crisis here for a second.
Hello again. Your turn.
Oh, wait, my turn. I'm sorry, I'm still reeling from the 78 years ago. American singer-songwriter Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan?
On this date in, Chaka Khan? That's right. He was born on this date in 1953.
Which would make her...
78.
69. No. Okay, we'll go with
69.
That.
69, okay.
Suddenly these people aren't massively older than us. What happened? Like, 69's right around the corner.
I'll bring up something in a minute, but I'll tell you.
Listener birthdays last week, since we didn't have a show, and this week include March 16th, Michelle Lopez, a.k.a. Country Signs. Haven't heard from her in a long time. Hope you're out there safe and everything's cool. Greg Lemon is on the 18th. 19 is JT Shea. Wow, we miss you, JT. The 19th is also former owner of this studio and house, Michael R. Menengay. I did text him and have a nice conversation for a while.
And some of the items that are still in your home?
Yes. No, he's not the owner of some of the items in the home.
No. Well, no. Yeah, you're right.
21st is... Oh, we got to wrap this up. We're running to the end. 21st is Crazy Joe Fiore from Megapodtastic, etc., etc. And Steve Rickyberg on the 23rd, along with Richard Parkman. 25th birthday is Nick St. Gabriel, or Nicholas, as he's written here. And then some schmuck named Chuck Tomasi.
Yeah, some jerk.
Just call him Lenny. Lenny and Squeaky.
Even on this list?
And also on the 26th is Brenna Baird from Hampton, Virginia, and Mark Blackburn on the 29th from the America at War podcast. He's currently cruising through the Civil War, which takes a while.
Hey, Steve Rickenberg, I think he's 78 today.
He passed us up. He was younger. He was a teenager forever. That's the way it was on this day in history for March 23rd, 2022. Did you get my banner up there for how you get your name on the birthday calendar?
No, but okay. I will do that.
Go
right
over
now.
To chuckchat.com/birthday. There we are. For those that are watching on video live or later. What did
you know? I still see Steve Rickenberg as a teenager, although he's not.
No,
I don't know why.
He's far from a teenager now.
Yeah, I mean, we've known him for a long time, but well, he was a teenager 17 years ago when we started out.
yeah, and Harrison was like 4.
I know. You know, I'll tell you this. It was kind of funny. Kim and I went out for a drink, and we were talking. It was kind of slow. We were talking with a bartender, and he's not from my hometown. However, he was sharing some stories about a couple of the older bars that were in town. I was like, "Oh yeah, I used to DJ there. Oh, I used to go there all the time." Well, he was like, "Oh, you worked there?" When I was there, it was like in 2007. I was like, "Oh no." I was like, I was there a lot earlier than that. And yeah. Then I realized, okay, he's talking about different eras.
Back when it was places. A bowling alley.
Yeah. I was like, oh, sorry. My gosh.
Every time I hear that song, Come Dancing by the Kinks, that's what I think of. They put a parking lot on a piece of land where the supermarket used to stand. Before that, they put up a bowling alley on the site that used to be the local pally. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. That's kind of how everybody's town goes, especially when you move away and then you go visit again. Like, what? What happened to the hospital? How do you get rid of a hospital?
Well, I was born in a hospital that's not a hospital anymore here in town.
I went to school in a school that's not anymore. All right, let's get on with the random
news. Crybabies.
Old man stuff.
Yeah.
Enough old man stuff.
Speaking of old man, we got good news crybabies. This old man, he thinks he knows how long it'll take us to get to Mars. So Elon Musk has made a prediction that we will be on Mars 2029 is what he says. I think he's trying to pull a JFK and saying before this decade is out, we'll send a man to Mars. But
I don't. He may not be that far off because I mean he's got the rocket, he's got the whole thing ready to go.
The thing I found interesting in this whole article, aside from his predictions, because you know you never really can trust what Elon's saying these days. He goes on about, oh, we're gonna go public. No, we're not. And he's like, pfft. I don't know why the SEC isn't all over that guy's buttocks, but.
They are.
It says,
SEC, I'm sure. Yeah.
It says a SpaceX site has dubbed the mission Dear Moon, and Japanese billionaire and space tourist Yusaka Mizawa will be among the crew for the 2023 mission. The Starship vessel, being an asset of a private company, comes with a user guide so customers can find out if working with SpaceX is right for them. And yeah, if you click the link through the show notes on episode 668 at Technorama, I almost said the topic is trick. At our site, right. chuckchat.com/technorama, you can find a PDF to this user guide. It's only 6 pages. It's amazing. This isn't an owner's manual, an operation manual, okay? It's just a user guide. Revision 1.0, March 2020.
It's kind of interesting, though. Look at the payload. Deployment sequence, and it has like the front of it.
It's got some technical looking charts in it.
Yeah.
And tables and pictures. Talks about the performance and the crew configuration, the cargo configuration, additional capabilities.
I'm telling you.
Let's see. What does it say? Fully reusable Starship and Super Heavy systems are expected to allow for space-based activities that have not been possible since the retirement of the space shuttle and space transportation system, or have never been possible before. With a fully reusable Starship, satellites can be captured and repaired in orbit, returned to Earth, or transferred to a new operational orbit. For more information on additional capabilities or to conceptualize new ideas, please contact sales@spacex.com.
Sales. hey, whatever you think about Elon, you got to give him credit for reading a lot of this old science fiction, having a vision, and making it possible.
Transporters and flying cars. Come on, Elon, get on the stick.
Yeah.
Nobody asked for a vertically landed rocket.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? He's making his vision possible. So, yep. And he's getting closer to anybody, whether we're going to be in Mars in 7 years or not. He's closer than anybody. So
I don't blame him. I blame his board for not sticking up for the crap he gets away with. Anyway, we're not turning this into a political podcast.
Nah.
Yet.
Yeah.
All right. You want to start with the next story about this amazing technique?
Yeah. So this new spinal cord stimulation study puts people with paralysis back on their feet.
And yes, it does.
Yes. So in the video here, Michael Roccati, am I saying his name right?
Yep.
Roccati lost the ability to walk after a motorcycle accident in 2017 when he had a complete spinal cord injury. But today, equipped with electrode device implanted on his spinal cord, which is not necessarily anything new, but it's more possible for him to walk than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
Than people have done it before. Excuse me. But today, equipped with electronic device implanted in his spinal cord, Roccati can enjoy simple things again, like standing at a bar for drinks with friends, taking a shower without a chair or mm-hmm. any assistance, I assume,
mm-hmm.
or even strolling around the town with a walker.
That's pretty cool. And if you watch the video, he is walking in a bit of a robotic motion. It's not very fluid. It's a little strip about a centimeter and a half wide by what it looked like about 10 centimeters long with some contacts on it. It almost looks like one of those strips when you get the like the multicolor LED strips from Hue or something. Only rip the LEDs off and stick it to your back. But this goes inside the spinal column. So it's laying like on your bundle of nerves, but inside of the bones, the vertebrae.
Yes.
And there's some kind of external controller, it looks like, that triggers the nerves when to fire. Now, I don't know. It didn't say whether or not he's got any feeling or sensation. Because when he takes a step, I swear, it looks like his shin hits the front of that walker every time.
He
never flinches or says, ow. But he's making way, and they've only inserted this on three people. So they're not fully clinically trialed yet, but the results are encouraging. And they want to get like 50 to 100 people wearing these so they can find out what works better on some people and other people and fine-tune
kinda
it.
Come up with a middle lane so you can kind of figure out where to start off with.
The way these people are walking, like I said, is a little robotic. It's like a herky-jerky kind of step.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like they need some kind of A to D converter on this device.
Or some fine-tuning for at least.
But hey, if you were paralyzed and confined to a wheelchair and suddenly you could stand at a bar and take a drink or, mm-hmm. you know, walk your way even with a walker, that's pretty monumental. That would be amazing.
I'm almost sure I saw, wasn't it in the video? I can't play right now, but I saw where he was like sitting and his friends were standing up and it's like his body just kind of rose up.
I didn't see him get out of the chair, but I might have missed
it. Maybe it wasn't this video, but I remember seeing a video of him, and it looked, like you said, a little bit robotic, but he was able to stand up, and he was just standing there at a table, at like a high top, with his friends having a drink.
Plus all this work, I mean, he's got to be good for the legs and for the circulation, because, you know, people in wheelchairs, their limbs...
Just movement in general, yeah.
They get big... Big beefy arms, but their legs get atrophied from not working. So now you're working them again, and you know mm-hmm. that's got to be good.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
We like it. Also, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, I see the paralyzed monkeys regain control of their legs and
No. Back. They're chimps, not monkeys. Know the difference of your
age. And the monkeys were able to stand at the bar and have a drink with their friends.
Well, pretty darn close. This is a behavior that I wouldn't have expected in chimpanzees, not monkeys. Monkeys have tails. Okay? Right. Apes don't, and chimps are apes. Okay, just it's like the different. It's like calling a dolphin a fish. You just don't go there. So anyway, the scientist Alessandra Mascaro, she was checking out these chimpanzees and noticed that this mother ape was taking care of her little baby ape, her little baby chimp, and the chimp had a cut, an open wound on the bottom of its foot. And, you know, that got to be painful, whether you're a human or a chimp or whatever.
Sure.
And she took this insect off of a nearby plant, you know, just grabs this insect, chews it up a little bit, makes a paste out of it or a poultice, and then smears it on the baby chimp's foot. Like, whoa, she just went to the drugstore and, you know, did. I never would have thought chimps could do something like that. Now, they have seen observations before where chimps self-medicate. You know, maybe they're hanging out, whatever the equivalent of coca leaves are.
Smoking a little weed.
Yeah. You know, those bonobos, they're crazy. But I to be able to take care of one another, A, show empathy, and B, I don't know where she got this knowledge, if it's now passed on, if there's some way to communicate. Like, hey, you see the bug with the yellow spots? Chew it up, and it helps your hurt stop hurty. So that's pretty cool. And you make it makes you wonder if there's other like pharmacological things that they know that we just haven't seen yet, or maybe it's just this one tribe. Don't know if every tribe has its own. It begs a lot of questions.
Well, the reason I was fascinated by this was because, you know, they were watching chimpanzees trying to. You know, a long time ago, they were talking about how animals don't use tools. And then you see them using a stick to get the ants out of an anthill or, you know, starting to use things as tools. And then you see something like this. It's like, whoa, this is an even bigger leap to, you know, to go, oh, this thing helps fix this thing.
Right.
Yeah. It's amazing.
How did they figure out that cause and effect? You know, maybe they were chewing on some of these bugs and went, my tongue is numb. So if my tongue is numb, maybe it'll feel better if your foot is numb instead of hurting. So you know, it could be a cause and effect thing like that. But just to remember,
I'd be super impressed if this was passed down kind of knowledge from one chimp to another.
Yeah. What you didn't see is she had a copy of the physician's desk reference, the PDR off to the side going, oh,
Grey's Anatomy. We're
not supposed to mix black and yellow bug with orange bug, or you'll have some crazy side effect.
Right.
And stay away from those tea leaves. That's pretty amazing stuff, though.
Mm-hmm.
That was an article we found from Ars Technica. So, yes, nature continues to amaze. They're not just dumb animals, people. They're actually sentient beings. All right, let's give a quick shout out to the chat room. We've got a couple people hanging out with us. We've got, we mentioned Ralph earlier, Ralph Wangler, and Mike Robeson is hanging out. Thank you very much, everybody, for checking us out. There may have been other people that have drifted in and out but didn't leave a comment. We don't know, but hope to see you. Normally, we do the show on Sunday nights, but of course, Craig was not feeling well last night, so we moved it to Monday night this time. And we will do our best to get our Patreon show out to you as fast as possible.
I wasn't sounding any better last night. I can tell you that for sure.
Sounded like a chimpanzee with a bug in his mouth. My tongue is numb.
That's right.
Should we do the Remember When thing? Let's do Remember When. I like always looking back and seeing what we can find. Well, you want to start this one?
No, you start it. Go ahead.
Okay. Another one from Ars Technica. Researchers used a 379-year-old algorithm to crack crypto keys that were found in the wild.
Hey, I won't lie. The title got me right off the bat. It was like 379 years ago.
So what happened was for the longest time, cryptography was using this safe zone crypto library. But It was cracked because there was a flaw. They weren't using prime numbers that were sufficiently far apart, which made it easier to guess what the primes were, decrypt them, et cetera, et cetera. So
sure.
Inside Secure, it was acquired by Rhombus as part of its 2019 acquisition of Verimatrix, a Rhombus representative said. And that version was, of course, deprecated prior to the acquisition and is distinct from a FIPS-certified version with the company. I'm not going to get deep into the security and tell you what FIPS stands for, et cetera, et cetera. But let me get to the good part of this article. Because cryptographers have long known, I mentioned the two prime number things, the difference between those two primes was really small, so the safe zone vulnerability is tracked down. You can read all about it in CVE-2022-26320. Cryptographers have long known that RSA keys that are generated with primes that are too close together can be trivially broken. Now, mathematicians will appreciate this, especially those of you that went to college, with Fermat's factorization method. French mathematician Pierre de Fermat first described this method in 1643. His algorithm was based on the fact that any odd number can be expressed as the difference between two squares. When, I never even thought about that, but that's a pretty cool thing. Who comes up with these things? When the factors are near the root of the number, they can be calculated easily and quickly, and this method isn't feasible when factors are truly random and hence far apart. So there's a section here that says, mind your P's and Q's.
Right.
So they use those two factors are typically denoted in these formulas as P and Q. So when P and Q are known publicly, the key that is made up is broken, meaning anyone can decrypt their data protected by the key or use the key to authenticate messages. And
wow,
that's not good. This goes for like your HTTPS traffic and more. So
yeah, that's pretty cool though.
Yeah, so why didn't somebody know about this and test it with this 379-year-old algorithm way back when?
Well, maybe somebody didn't go to college and understand what Fermat's factorization
I think it was just an application of a very old algorithm. They weren't thinking of, oh, here's something that deals with the squares of two numbers, and oh my, this could be used to crack these numbers. It sounds like it was an effect and a cause, not a cause and effect. Or, you know, they sort of reverse engineered and went, oh, you know what? Now that we know that, we could have used this. This is kind of
also one of those things where, you know, computers are not good. I know we're not talking about random numbers, but, you know, coming up with patterns on its own, like random, you know, whenever you generate random numbers on computers, you have to use a seed to kind of give it a little more even randomness.
But if you had a list of, let's say you took all the prime numbers between 1 and a million, okay, that's a finite set, and you said, okay, computer, give me two random numbers, you could still do a secondary check to say, are you two even in the same neighborhood? I mean, you should be at least, you know, 20 apart or 50 apart or whatever the number is to say, okay, minimum of 50 digits, 50 slots, you know, in an index, if say prime number 2 is at index 1, prime number 3 is at index 2, then you go 5 and 7 and 11 and 13, and you know, you've got these slots of prime numbers. Certainly you don't want to go, give me two random numbers. It goes 2 and 3. Like, not good enough.
Yeah, not good.
How about
enough
2 and 271? Ah, we're getting there, a little bit better. Okay, so I think you just need to put in a second pass to that filter.
Yeah.
Or say a minimum of this high. I mean, you could define that finite set any way you want.
Well, it's funny. I'm actually doing something like that at work. Not.
Oh dear.
Not to that degree.
You're cracking encryption keys?
No.
Oh.
But talking about the randomness not being random enough is that it's hard to explain without really getting in deep into what I do, but I've had several times where, see, I spin up virtual machines for labs. So here's a lab and it's got a unique name for, you know, DNS names.
Yep.
All right. So the other day, this one lab got spun up and the DNS was getting removed automatically. I was like, why in the world is that getting removed? And when you go in and look, it actually had the same name as a lab from a year ago.
Oops.
And my system was like, oh, it's terminated. Let's remove them. I was like, no, it's not terminated. So I had to change a few things to make it look for the right.
You didn't do cleanup a year ago.
Oh, well, oh, Chuck, you have no idea. Well,
your cleanup routines fell asleep.
I have not deleted any lab records. And again, I can go into this in more detail for everybody that don't know. For the last 7 years, I've been doing the system I got. I had 637,000 lab records. So it was inevitable that some of them would be the same. So it was just unfortunate. Yep. It's one of those things I go, why is it doing this? And after about an hour, you go, oh.
It sounds like you need one more filter that says, and active is true.
Well, yeah, actually a little sorting made the difference, but okay. I figured it out.
Let's give our Patreons a huge thanks and then go into Pass Me the Remote because we've got some really good shows to talk about here.
All right.
Oh, there's some music back there. There it is. All right. Thank you to our patrons. They are the people that support this show financially. As little as $1 a show. We really, really do appreciate it. We've got some expenses coming up, and thanks to them, we know that we're covered, which means this show will continue coming to you through the end of the year. That's our hope. They also get a special episode, which we will be recording right after this. It is not as formal as this. It's Craig and I just batting ideas back and forth. Terrible, terrible tennis game is what it's more like.
Right.
Train wreck in slow motion. There's a band name. Okay. Thank you, Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Abner Braverman. Thank you very much, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer. Thank you, Dean Jensen and Denise Inglis. And Gary Lindros, whom we mentioned earlier in our comments.
He's always Gary Lindros?
That Gary Lindros. Okay. John Clifford and John Noble. Yorga Shrawan and Kyle Nishioka. We also have Leon. Thank you, long-term members. Mark Kilfoyle, Matt Baum, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media. Still wondering who would name their kid Saturday, but hey, the Adams family had Wednesday, and Robinson Caruso had Friday. Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and sweet Steve London from Sweden. Thank you to all of them. They went to the link you see on the screen right there, patreon.com/technoramapodcast, and they got themselves in the club. They get to listen to that special content all for that limited price offer. Now, you can do it for as low as $1. We're always appreciative if you have more than $1 in your pocket.
Yeah.
That helps.
Got to have some tip money.
Software upgrades, bandwidth, live streaming costs, it adds up after a while. But you know what? It's been like 4 or 5 years that our wives have not gotten angry at us for taking money out of the kids' college fund.
Yeah, there's plenty of other things for them to get angry at us for, but not that.
Not to mention that my kids are out of college.
Still in college.
Stealing from the grandkids' college fund at this point.
Yeah.
All right, let's do the Pass the Remote. Kick us off with a good one.
So, it looks like we both watched The Adam Project on Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, they pulled out the stars for this one, didn't they? Felt like I was watching a Marvel movie at some point.
I know. We had, Ryan Reynolds for sure.
Yep.
And then...
Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana.
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo. It was a little bit on the formulaic, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought Ryan Reynolds and I do not have the kid's name in front of me. I thought they really worked well together.
Yes.
Which was really cool.
Yes. So the idea was this man from the future in the year 2050 comes back and meets his 12-year-old self and stops off in 2022. But that was a mistake. He was aiming for 2018 to try and prevent something from happening that sets the timeline off course. And his dad is involved. And we don't want to spoil it for you, but I thought for sure that if they took care of the baddies, that dad wouldn't die. I thought they were responsible for dad's death. And I was really kind of disappointed that that didn't have a happier ending than it did.
Well, I thought they kind of stated what happened to him.
They just said he died in a car crash, but you didn't know if it was, if it was malicious. That's what the word I was looking for.
Malicious. Yeah. So, but I enjoyed it. What would you say?
It had that, it wasn't quite as off the cuff, lighthearted goofiness as Deadpool, knowing Ryan Reynolds, but it did have some points in there that they came home, and I laughed out loud more than a few times on that movie.
Yeah. There was some good stuff in there.
And there were some heartfelt moments too. So like at the end.
Yes, for sure. Definitely. So I thought they did a good job with it. And again, it's on Netflix. It's not like you're going to see it in the theater. So go check it out. The Adam Project.
Yep. I got one for you. The Andy Warhol Diaries, also on Netflix. Yes. Six-part series, about an hour each episode, some a little longer, some a little shorter. And I knew about Andy Warhol in the 80s as he was, later in his career. Knew him as the soup can guy. Remember him from the Cars video, Hello Again. He was a bartender in that. Yeah. But I really didn't know much about his life. And this really goes in. He wrote a diary for like the last 10 years of his life, from the mid to late 70s up until the time he passed in 87, I want to say it was.
It was like mid. Yeah, you're right.
And it was a really interesting story because they get into the whole AIDS scare. A lot of his friends were gay and were taken by the HIV AIDS thing. It really put a spotlight on some of the other artists too. I'm trying to remember some of their names. I'm totally, you'll see their art and go, oh, that's who did that.
Right.
So very entertaining. It is a slow paced show. Okay. You're not going to get any action. I mean, Andy Warhol was a very deadpan guy, very moderate. He was a genius in terms of his art, but he never called attention to himself. But it gives you insights. Goes back into his childhood in the first episode, of course, and you get to know really why he is who he is and how he never really fit in, and of course, the struggles he went through being gay in the 50s, 60s, 70s. It wasn't even the 80s.
That right there makes you an outcast and social circles back in the day.
He found his people and he felt very free and open and whatnot, and he had some love interest. Doggone it, the name of the one kid that's artist is driving me nuts. The Puerto Rican Jean-Michel Bach, can't remember, not Bakhtiari. That's a Packers player, but he he really came on the scene in his early 20s and. Burned bright and burned fast and burned out by the age of about 28. And you just say to yourself, man, what would the world of art be like if these people were still around?
I know. You think about Jimi Hendrix or any of those great artists that died before their prime or during their prime, and you're like, what would they be like today?
I liked it. I found myself watching about an episode a night because it's an hour and you want to take time to absorb what you've seen. And don't have the little kids around. There are some very explicit artwork that pops up on the screen from time to time.
I'm sure. So, yeah.
Good stuff, though. Good stuff.
You know what? Just a quick side note. I don't have this article in our stories, but I saw an article today about a photographer. Now I sort of say his name was Charlie Daniels, but it's not right. But something like that. Anyway, he This guy has today 3,600 rolls of undeveloped film.
Yikes.
He has been shooting Rock and Roll Acts since 68.
Well, get those things over to Walgreens or something before they expire.
Walgreens. Well, it was amazing. They did in the article, they showed a couple of pictures or a few pictures, and it was like, some of the Rolling Stones. It was, Rod Stewart, you name it. Any big act, he had pictures of them. I could not believe he had so many rolls of film.
That's awesome.
There was a picture of him sitting on a couch, and it looked like a table with just all those rolls of film just stacked on it. I'm so curious to see what's in those rolls of film.
Jean-Michel anyway. Basquiat. That's what his name
there
was.
There you go. Basquiat.
And they had a lot of narration in Warhol's voice. And some obviously, they had film footage of him, TV interviews and whatnot. But then the overdub stuff sounded really, really good. Like, there's a line in here that says, he once said, "I love Los Angeles. I love Hollywood. They're so beautiful. Everything's plastic, but I love plastic. I want to be plastic." You know, he was such a flat person externally, but he was pretty deep internally. Cool. All right, you got another one?
Yeah, so I took my son to go see The Batman, which is the newer Batman incarnation with Robert Pattinson as Batman.
Okay.
And Zoe Kravitz as the Catwoman. Mm-hmm. And it had Colin Farrell was the Penguin, which if you didn't know, because I'm telling you right now, that Colin Farrell, you wouldn't have recognized Colin Farrell in that movie. He was deep in makeup, but it totally looked like another person. I mean, it's not like Danny DeVito was eating a fish kind of thing. It was a guy. It was amazing, the makeup. But the Batman, I thought from end to end, I thought it was a very well done film. However, it's 3 hours long.
Oh.
And in that 3 hours, there's a lot of conspiracy. Oh, somebody did this, somebody did that, somebody did that, and they did that. And it's like, you know, it was a lot to take in. They should have simplified that, I think, a lot when they developed the script. However, I thought it was well done. I was digging his costume. The sound design for that film was great. The visuals for that movie was great. So I can totally recommend this film. And I'm trying not to tell you. I'm not going to tell you anything.
Oh, Andy Serkis is in there.
Yeah, Andy Serkis is in there. And he was more of a detective working a case rather than Batman was more of a detective.
Oh, Jeffrey Wright, too. Man, you should have done a whole bunch. Jeffrey Wright, you know him from Westworld. That's where I know him from. I'm looking for a picture of the Penguin.
Yeah, go look for the Penguin.
Who's the young lady that's in there? What's
Zoe Kravitz.
Okay, what character does she play?
Catwoman.
Oh, she doesn't have any ears.
No, not exactly. But,
Oh, there he is. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would definitely check that out. I'm not mistaken, and I think this may be early information, I'm not sure, but I think April 19th, the Batman will be on HBO Max, so you get a chance to see it there.
Penguin put on some COVID pounds.
Well, yeah, see, he looks convincing, but it's not the same it's the same person
working from home just isn't working for him.
Yeah. So anyway, it was a good movie. Harrison also had a lot of the same problems I was just laying out there. So Harrison said, what did he say? He was giving it a 7.5 or 7. I was like, probably more on the 8, but it was good. And speaking of sound design, one of the things I liked was, and this is not a giveaway, but this cop was like talking to Batman. He's in an apartment and it's just the cop and it's Batman. He goes, wait, you, what are you doing in here? And Batman just looks at him. Okay, fine. And then the guy says, wait, don't touch that evidence. He looks at him again. Fine. All right, you're okay. It's just that he doesn't say anything.
That's pretty weak argument.
No, you have to see it, though. He just gives him that look with the eyes through the mask. And he's like, it's okay. It's okay. Anyway, that's really
intimidation.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. I got one more. Yeah. This is on Paramount Plus. It's the prequel. A lot of people have heard of Yellowstone, right? With the Dalton family and whatnot. The ranchers that are trying to keep their property, et cetera, et cetera. This is the origin story of that. It's called 1883. Okay. It's got Sam Elliott. It's got a number of other people that are really good. Not going to mention them at this point. But the Dalton family starts off in Texas. And they're reluctantly helping this group of German, Austrian, Romanian immigrants, you know, some Eastern European people, get to Oregon. And along the way, there is every form of death and destruction you can imagine, from drowning in a river to getting bit by a snake to getting shot by raiders. There's a lot of stuff. Sadly, it's only one season. I was really digging the show. Like, no. So it's kind of the story of how they ended up where they did in Wyoming, I believe it was. Or was it Montana? I think they went to Wyoming. So it was, I really enjoyed it. It's narrated through their daughter. So she's telling the story about, you know, what she sees on the plains. And it's very, very deep, very poetic. She's got this older than should be attitude towards it. So really cool.
Aren't they coming out with another series? Same vein, instead of 1883, it's a different decade.
Could be. I don't know. Yeah, hadn't heard.
I thought they were supposed to do something kind of lead into it.
I'd watch that because so far I've liked both of those. Yellowstone, I think, is 4 seasons in. It's at least 3. I think 4 is just coming out. But
yeah, my wife's watching that or watched all that. So
yep, good stuff. I saw a shirt yesterday that said, what's the daughter's name? The one that's just...
usually
drunk. Oh, Craig. Oh, you're going to make me look it up.
Right, go look it up real quick. Come on.
All right. I'll go look it up. I'm trying to remember her name. It's not Sarah. Yellowstone. Kevin Costner. Da-da-da-da-da. There it is. Okay. Episodes, videos, photos, the cast. Beth. Kelly Riley plays this character, Beth Dutton. I said Dalton, it's Dutton. And the shirt said, it was like, don't make me get all Beth Dutton on your ass or something. Wow. Okay. She's the kind of lady that'll, you know, shoot you, then stomp on your grave kind of thing. It's like, not really not a nice person at all.
Yeah. Well, they got a lot of people in this show in Yellowstone.
Yeah, Yellowstone, 1883 as well. Good stuff. Good stuff. Okay.
Neil McDonough.
Those are our shows for Pass Me the Remote, and we are just about out of time. We're going to wrap up with the Geek Library, which should be that button. This is a video about 3.5 minutes long of inventions that never caught on, like the underwater propeller boat or the helicopter, or underwater propeller belt, I should say. The propeller.
Yeah.
Train cars that can ride over one another.
I've seen those before. You know, not in person, but.
Yeah. Like, well, if you only have one track, zip lines that attach to your head.
Okay. When I saw this, I was like, you got to be kidding me. They're literally attaching it to somebody's hair.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, then it breaks loose and he falls in the water. Monowheel, the one-wheeled car. Well, Men in Black had that.
Right. Yeah, they did.
A little hard to park and see where you're going.
Actually, that one looks pretty cool.
Beard swimsuits. Because why not? Beard swimsuits. It's just like this big rubber glove that goes over your beard.
What's funny is if you wait a second, you'll see the women swimming in the, yeah, they're changing.
The portable clothes. Changing room.
And look, wait a minute. They run over there and kiss the guys with the beard.
With the beard. So you have to take it. The car jack that uses the exhaust to lift the car. I don't know if there's crazy. Enough pressure to do that, but okay.
Well, it's just got to push in there. You can have a back valve.
The automatic lawnmower. Whoa, it turns corners. How does it do that? The bicycle lawnmower. Here, Johnny, get on your bike and ride across my lawn. Yeah.
Don't fall over your handlebars.
Oh, and he did fall over the handlebars. The self-launching lifeboat. Whee! Away we go.
I know.
Boy.
That thing really launched off, too, didn't it?
And then he gets out and drowns. That doesn't work. Yeah. Static electricity.
Oh, I'm going to take you all with me.
The static electricity assisted haircuts, because, you know, the static electricity makes your haircuts, your hair stand straight up.
Hey, oh. I like how the guy's pulling the lever, and you see the guy, other guy's hair go up and go back down. And go back up.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
The mono wheel mini, because you need a small version. That's instead right. of the family size. That does look a lot like the one on Men in Black. The pedal-propelled mini scooter. This man is just gliding through town on a little...
That doesn't look like crazy.
No. Yeah, well, it does, because he takes it in the building. He's got a long overcoat over it.
Yeah, it's probably got like some midgets under there holding him.
Motorized skates. Yeah, I'd do that.
That doesn't look that crazy. I mean,
early version of roller skates. These are big. They had big wheels on them, but he's got a tire pump to inflate the tires.
Oh, you know what? I watched a video of a guy making those kind of wheels.
Actually, this looks like something that the Olympic cross country skiers might use.
This guy saw a video, of something similar to this, and he decided to recreate it.
The mechanical exoskeleton for assisted walking. Well, this album is a lot like what we were just talking about to help the paralyzed people, only this is...
This is how Iron Man got his start.
I'm not sure what the dish pans are for on the back. The motorized mechanical horse.
And it falls over.
That was the best end. You ruined the ending for him. But yes, you must watch this. Go to our Geek Library show notes, episode 668. And be sure to watch the video in the Geek Library, Old Inventions That Never Caught On. That made us laugh, and it should make you laugh too. Our question of the week that we leave you with, because we are leaving you real soon now. Well, till next week. What is so ancient only an internet veteran can remember?
That little construction gif where the guy was shoveling.
Where the shovel really didn't look like a shovel. It looked like he had a stick into a pile of poo or something.
Yeah.
And I never could figure out quite what he was shoveling. So that's our question for you. We'll get that on social media next Saturday.
I would say using a hearing the dial-up tones. Although people still recognize it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but people don't necessarily hear it anymore.
AOL floppies for 10 free hours. Years.
Huh?
AOL floppies for 10 free hours.
Yeah.
I think they eventually got up to like 1,000 or 1,500 free hours.
Real Player.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I thought Real Player was awesome.
Live 365. I think Live 365 is still around.
It might be. But yeah, Real Player was cool. I remember the first time I actually saw a little, it was a streaming.
The International Birthday website. You could go there and put your name. It was like our birthday calendar. You could go, it was kind of like a wiki. You just put your birthday on there, and then random people would say happy birthday to you from around the internet.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It wasn't like scalable, but it worked.
Anyway, our guestbook websites. Remember people had guestbook? Hey, sign here if you can.
Page counters.
Page counters.
Flaming logos. Anything that flashed. The flash HTML tag. Thank goodness that's gone. All right, we're going to leave you on that.
The blink tag. There you go. The blink. I think that's what you're talking about.
Gray web pages. Thank you for joining us. You can get a hold of us. Put up the contact information on the screen there, Craig.
Oh,
you can
yeah.
get a hold of us by calling the listener line 707-530-2428. Maybe you want to phone in what your old internet memory is. 707-530-CHAT. Yeah. Or you can email us, technorama@chuckchat.com, or send a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Snail mail.
I'm not giving you my personal address at this point. If you can't find it on the internet, you're not looking hard enough.
Right.
Okay. Till next time, everybody take care. Be safe. Craig, give them a binary high five.
All right. 101.
Thank you for listening. Talk to you again real soon. Bye.